along the top of the dune, heading toward a ragged cliff.
Later. First we eat.
Shielding her face with a cupped hand against the setting sun, Christy soon spied what he was referring to. Food. And lots of it. Working their way back to the shore along a rocky arroyo, Christy and Ryan splashed into an irregular bay dotted with hundreds of small tide pools. Basins of seawater had been trapped in depressions in the hard ground as the tide withdrew, accidentally leaving behind some of the bounty of the sea. Most of the puddles contained only water and colorful shells, but several were impromptu aquariums, housing an assortment of small marine life, tiny fish, seahorses, or waving kelp. Kneeling in a pool, Ryan reached into the inches of water and came up with a fat oyster. He tossed it over to Christy.
Dinner.
Christy made the catch and eagerly pulled out a knife to open the hard shell. The oyster resisted and failed.
There must be hundreds of them. Enough food for months.
The raw meat was slimy but delicious. However, her stomach rumbled unabated, the tiny morsel barely denting her ravenous appetite. Tossing her another one, Ryan readily agreed. He took the third oyster himself, splitting the shell and slurping down the creature intact. Chewing would have only wasted time. Casting the empty shell aside, he started to pass Christy another when he saw the woman was already splitting an oyster she had located. Together, the couple waded across the basin, raiding every tide pool, devouring the oysters equally. They almost feasted on a small squid, but the nimble creature squirted out oily black ink when captured and squirmed from Ryan's grasp to escape back into the rising sea. Ryan had to wash his hands clean in a puddle.
Too bad. They taste like chicken.
Spitting out a flawless pearl, Christy started to make a comment when she was interrupted by the crackle of distant gunfire, closely followed by the dull thud of a black powder gren. She immediately sheathed her blade.
Sounds like us.
Could be. Let's go see.
They began to splash toward the sounds of combat. Not far away, a group of armed people strode around the base of a pre-dark lighthouse. Located at the far end of a sandbar that jutted into the ocean, the 100-year-old structure was intact and undamaged from war or weather. The sloping walls of granite blocks were as strong as the day it was built, and the resilient plexiglass panels unbroken around the crystalline glass beacon atop the tower. The roof was covered with bird droppings, and piles of seaweed and driftwood partially buried under windblown sand were banked against the base of the tower. The white paint had been removed by a sheer passage of time to expose the blue-veined granite blocks composing the building. Unfortunately, there was no door in sight, and fat blue crabs were underfoot everywhere. It seemed like the more the companion shot, the more crawled out of the water. It was as if the damn creatures were attracted to explosions. Swinging his shotgun off his shoulder, J.B. Dix rammed the stock of the weapon against the side of the lighthouse. The resulting thud gave no indication of weakness, or even of empty space beyond the adamantine material. The lighthouse was a fortress. Adjusting his glasses, the wiry man returned the shotgun to its usual position over his shoulder, slung opposite the Uzi machine pistol.
Nothing. Anybody got any ideas?
Well, the balcony is too high to reach.
Dr. Mildred Wyatt's hand rested on a canvas bag slung over one shoulder. The faded lettering, MASH, was almost unreadable, but the bag was neatly patched and contained a meager store of medical supplies. Held at her side was a sleek Czech ZKR target pistol, a state trooper gun belt with attached holster strapped over her regular belt. Loops for extra ammo ringed the gun belt, but most of them were empty. The vacant sheath of a small knife peeked from her left boot, and a long thin dagger bearing the logo of the Navy SEALs hung from her belt. Just then, something blue scuttled around the side of the lighthouse, closely followed by three men armed with blasters, their faces grim and unsmiling. As the crab came close, JB crushed it underfoot. The shell burst apart, and the hideously mangled mutie started thrashing about. Dean Carter kicked the bleeding creature into the waves. It disappeared with a splash.
Bastard things are everywhere! I killed six more on the other side!
Good. The more ace, the better.
The young boy nodded in agreement. Almost 12 years of age, Dean was beginning to resemble his father in frightening detail, and already carried himself with the calm assurance of a seasoned combat veteran. A Browning semi-automatic pistol was in his hand, jacked and ready for trouble. There was a slash across his denim shirt, showing some badly bruised ribs, minor damage incurred from the exploding bridge at Spider Island. A fat leather pouch hung from his belt, distended with ammo clips, but the pack rode high, telling of scant ammo in the precious collection of magazines. An oversized Bowie knife rode at the small of his back with easy access for either hand. The nearby waves gently crested on the rough shoreline, foaming and breaking endlessly. A seagull winged silently overhead, something small and wiggling held tight in its deadly beak. Mildred gazed at the railing that encircled the walkway around the beacon on the top level.
Normally, a lighthouse would be placed on a cliff or jetty to maximize visibility. Must have been some major earthquakes to move it to sea level.
Built to withstand the worst weather possible. Only reason it's still standing after sky dark.
It doesn't matter. There's no door, so I say we keep walking along the beach. We haven't even covered half of the island yet.
Very true, my young friend.
Dr. Theophilus Algernon Tanner looked up at the boy. In a frock coat and frilly shirt, the silver-haired gentleman appeared to be from another era, which, in fact, he was.
Yet the panoramic view offered by the sheer height of this construct should be invaluable in helping to locate your father and Christie.
Doc's clothes were of the finest material and patched in a dozen places. He was leaning on an ebony sword stick, the silver lion's head peeking out between his fingers, and a mammoth revolver was hung at his waist. The Lama was a Civil War weapon holding 9.44 caliber rounds, with a single shotgun round under the main barrel. The blaster used black powder, not cordite, but the solid lead mini-balls did more damage than a sledgehammer at short range. Mildred continued to watch the shoreline for any signs of the nasty muties.
Besides, with the tide comes those damn crabs.
Indeed, madam. Our local cornucopia of antediluvian crustacean is merely another reason why shelter for the night is mandatory.
Still gotta get inside.
Tower short.
A true albino, Jack Lauren was dressed in camo fatigues with a bulky Colt Python 357 Magnum hung from his belt. An ammo pouch laid flat at his opposite hip. His camouflage leather jacket was decorated with bits of shiny metal and feathers, and more than one sec man had seized the teenager by the lapels, only to have his fingers cut off by the razor blade sewn into the lining. At present, the arms of his jacket were tied around his waist, showing a lot of his pale skin. His hair was shoulder length and bone white, his red eyes peering out of his scarred face like ruby lasers. More than a dozen leaf-bladed throwing knives were hidden on his person, with two more tucked into his belt. The handle of a gravity knife was visible in his left combat boot.
It is? Looks okay to me.
Doc walked closer to the structure, as if seeing it for the first time.
By the three Kennedys, it is too short. By necessity, lighthouses are always tall, 60 to 80 feet high. This is only, say, 30.
The man glanced at the ground.
The lower half must be buried beneath the sand. The front door must be buried 20, 30 feet underground.
It'll take days to dig that deep by hand.
There were already traces of purple on the horizon. Night was coming fast.
Try a grin.
JB tilted back his fedora.
Only got one. I'm saving that for an emergency.
If we could reach the balcony, then getting inside would be no problem. Even if the door is locked, we could go through the lens itself. Those were made of glass to withstand the searing heat of the beacon.
JB removed his hat, smoothed down his hair, then replaced it.
Sounds good. But how do we get up there?
Mayhap, there is another way in.
Going to the lighthouse, Doc put his back to the building and gazed out over the field. He appeared to be counting under his breath.
There.
Doc walked briskly to the end of the sandbar, where there was a short stack of rocks covered with seaweed. Removing handfuls of the soggy greenery, Doc exposed not jumbled rocks, but broken bricks. Tossing them aside, he soon exposed a perfectly square hole that went straight down and out of sight. Grinning, JB slapped the man on the back.
It's a chimney. Good work, Doc. I didn't know a lighthouse would have a house attached.
A cottage, actually. But yes, many do.
Cupping his hands as protection from the sea breeze, Jack lit a match and dropped it down the opening. The tiny flame fluttered away and was gone. The teenager then lit another and stuck his entire head into the passage.
Too small for me. Maybe Dean, too.
Dubiously, the boy eyed the flue, and then used a stick to measure the opening, then himself.